Okay. Good morning, fellow space travelers.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Those of you who are live in person, and those of you who are alive and not in person, live electronically, welcome. Oh, and please, if you wouldn't mind muting yourself. And if you need to say something, just unmute. Because sometimes we got so many people online, there's sometimes a lot of extraneous noises that come through that sometimes you hear them, sometimes you don't. So I'm not sure whether I can do that on my end. There you go. Sometimes it stays that way, sometimes it doesn't. Anyway, let's just take a minute, guys, gals. To get a sense of our connection with one another. Send light and love and blessings to all of those people in all of those nations that are in turmoil right now, from natural disasters, as well as disasters created by terrorism, hatred, fear, separation. The world is in a lot of pain right now. And it is very easy to get wrapped up in the pain and not see past it or through it. So, all of these people who are suffering or having a difficult time with life are also divine children of God. No matter what they might appear like. There have been many times when we have been held in the light when we could not do that for ourselves. And so we're taking this time out of time to be able to do that for others. I see you. I see you for the truth of who you are. Just breathe that in for a moment. Stretch a bit. You can open your eyes if they were closed. Anybody have any leftover stuff from last week or past times? Was it? And by the way, I know I've mentioned this before, but if you ever have any questions or there's some material you want to delve in on a personal level, please don't hesitate to either call me or get me by email. I will correspond that way with you. I don't want to leave anybody hanging. Okay, I'm going to presume that that's an open answer. So I'm going to begin on page 189. And if you don't have a book, that's okay because we'll read it out loud. But for those of you who have a book, I'm on page 189, right around the middle of the page. Now, these words that are going to be spoken were spoken by the guides to Paul, who is the channel for this work. But they're also spoken to each one of us. So this material and the dimension that we are on is rather timeless. So please don't think, well, this is being dictated by somebody 10 years ago. It's the energetic truth of what we're talking about is happening right now. Please try to keep that in mind. Paul, you too will know the joy we speak of, and we are teaching you as we teach the rest right now in this moment. You have a right to this, you see, And it was your whisper that we heard so many years ago when you said, "Take me all away. May it be so." I'm tired of pussyfooting around this whole thing about enlightenment. Let's do it. I'm willing. And we came and said, yes, it may be done. It may be so. We have been holding your hand for many lifetimes. We will not leave you now. I find that tremendously comforting. We have held your hand for lifetimes, and we will not leave you now. Jesus said that I will never leave you alone. And I've always translated that two ways in my head. One is the obvious literal meaning, I will never leave you alone. I'll always be with you. I will never deny you. I'll never leave you by yourself. I'm always there. And the other one is, I will never leave you alone. I will keep poking and prodding you until you realize the truth of who you are. And I'm not going to stop until you're willing to embrace that truth. So everything that comes up in your life, everything that might be challenging or difficult or even joyful, you can make into a lesson of remembrance and a reminder of the truth of who you are. Because I will not stop poking you, prodding you, bugging you until you realize that truth. We teach you all, every one of you, in an admiration for the changes you are going through in this encounter. If you're a parent or a grandparent, you notice what it's like to take pride in an accomplishment of your child or grandchild, even though it might seem very, very simple. And how you rejoice in that, maybe in the first steps they take, or getting an A at school, or, you know, it could be something really, really simple. And so the guides are saying, we rejoice with you and along with you, the same way a parent might rejoice with a child who is growing and changing and stretching. We are teaching you at each level that you can comprehend. Now, this is very important for you to understand. The level that you can comprehend is what you can attend to and no more. In other words, don't try and be someplace where you're not. When you say, here I am on my spiritual path, recognize all you're doing is affirming what's already there. You're not saying, well, you're not analyzing that trip. Because if somebody asked me, Jerry, where are you on your spiritual path? And I gave you an answer, that'd just be my perception of things. It's not the truth. And it's a very simple, it's kind of a lower self, lower consciousness kind of awareness. It really doesn't have anything to do with the truth because I don't know where I am. And it doesn't matter. And so what they're saying is that, how did Ram Dass put it this way? He said, he was talking about different forms of spiritual practice. He said, let's suppose that I decide in my spiritual practice that I need to be celibate as part of my path at this particular time in my life. And I decide, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to refrain from any sexual activity. But I'm not, let's suppose I say that, and I say that with all honest desire in my heart, but I also realize that I'm not ready to do that. So what I become is what he says, I become a horny celibate. I become somebody who thinks I should be celibate, but can't be. And then I start condemning or judging myself for doing, or let's suppose I say, I need to be a vegetarian. Because all my semi-enlightened friends are vegetarians. And that might be a wonderful piece of your spiritual path, and it might not be. But if you try and be something that you're not, let's suppose you force yourself to be a vegetarian. It's like, well, Jerry, did you quit smoking? Yes, I did. 5 years, 6 months, 1 week, 2 days, 5 hours, and 35 minutes. I'm almost dying of not smoking. Now, if somebody were asking me that today, I could tell you, yes, I quit smoking, and I have no idea when that happened. I just know that I worked on it, and I worked on it, and I worked on it, and one day I woke up, and I wasn't smoking, and I didn't smoke the next day, and I didn't smoke, but I have no idea when that was. I have a general idea of the time frame, but a date or a time, don't know, and doesn't matter. So you can't be something that you're not. Where are you on your spiritual path? I have no idea of how to be able to define that. I just know this is where I am. And we will accept you there, and we will open yourself. We were suggesting allowing yourself to open yourself up to whatever it is you need to learn or stretch with or grow with at this particular moment. The level that you can comprehend is what you can attend to and no more. You are where you are. You can't be another place. You do not give trigonometry to a child who cannot add two and two. Nothing wrong with the child. Nothing wrong with the adult who doesn't understand trigonometry either, okay? You can't force something to happen. You do not give trigonometry to a child that cannot add two and two. She will be baffled and ashamed. Wow. Shame is not a way on a spiritual path. Letting go of shame is. But if something is making you feel ashamed or uptight or screwed up or whatever words you want to use, let it go, man. It's not for you at this moment. It might be for you later on, but not now. If it's connected with shame or guilt or not enoughness, which is one of my favorites, let it go. It has nothing to do with the truth of who you are. It's like with the gospel story of the woman taken in adultery, when all these scribes and Pharisees picked up rocks to stone her with, and Jesus didn't say anything. He just started drawing in the sand. And the conjecture was that he drew each one of these people's sins in the sand, the things that they were ashamed of. He wrote it in the sand, and one by one they dropped their rocks and walked away to find there was no one else there. And he said to the woman, he said, "Does anyone condemn you?" She said, "No one will." "So neither do I condemn you." I'm not asking you to be anything that you're not. For the woman by the well in Samaria, he said, bring me your husband. She said, "I don't have a husband." He said, "You're right. You don't have one now. You had five already, but you don't have one at this moment. I am not judging you for that. I'm just telling you to be honest with yourself. Don't try to be something that you're not. You'll be addressed by this teaching and by our call at the level that is appropriate to at whatever stage of evolution and growth you are at now. In other words, I will speak to your soul. And every one of you might pick up something different. It has nothing to do with right or wrong, good or bad, or I'm better than you are, or I'm smarter than you are, or I'm more spiritually advanced than you. You will get whatever it is you need, because that's the divine self's purpose, is to give you whatever it is you need at this moment. Nothing more, nothing less.
Jerry.
Yeah.
I'm back at the well with that woman. Maybe I'm remembering scripture wrong, but didn't Jesus go on to tell her, go and sin no more? What Is that what he told her? And if so, what did he mean by that?
It wasn't the woman at the well. It was what the story that's called The Woman Taken in Adultery.
Okay.
When he said to her, "Does anyone condemn you?" And she said, "No one, Lord." He said, "Go your way. Your sins are forgiven." Or in my, so I think they're probably right. There probably are some translations that say sin no more. But that's open to a lot of interpretation, because our understanding, our metaphysical understanding of the even the word sin,
Right.
our understanding of the word sin means is a term that came from archery, meaning missing the mark. And how many times have we missed the mark? Was it didn't mean that we were bad. It means I was attracted to something that was in limitation. So what he said was, if you want to put it in a metaphysical terminology, is go your way and don't miss the mark anymore. Because all that missing the mark creates is a lot of turmoil, and a lot of doubt, and a lot of fear, and a lot of shame. And God knows you don't need any more of that. Go your way and work on not missing the mark.
I like that.
Because I
Thanks, Jerry.
guarantee if you don't miss the mark, if you don't miss the mark, you're going to feel a whole lot better about yourself. And life's going to become a little bit simpler and maybe a lot easier. Go your way and don't miss the mark. I'm not blaming you. I'm not judging you. Does that make sense?
I like that. Makes sense.
Okay.
Thanks,
Yeah,
Jerry.
Jim.
Jerry, would you also add, I mean, or maybe also be willing not to miss the mark?
Yeah, it's interesting, Jim, you bring that up. Jim was bringing up the idea of being willing not to miss the mark. That seems to be one of the key elements in Paul Selig's work and the guys in their work with us, is being willing. I am willing to be open. I am willing to be healed. I am willing to be guided by my divine consciousness. Now, here's the trick. It gets a little bit tricky after a while, because sometimes, this is what I learned for myself anyway, Jim. Sometimes I'm not quite willing. I want to be willing, but I'm not quite willing. Here, you find yourself in that position. And sometimes what I have to do is that I'm willing to be willing. And sometimes I'm willing to be willing to be willing. I've got to kind of take a step back and say, well, here's where I am. I'm not willing yet. I'm not quite willing to be willing yet. I'm willing to be willing to be willing. And that's okay, because that spirit can work with that one. But when I try to be willing and I'm not, all that produces is a lot of guilt and shame and all the other stuff that we don't need anymore of, or it creates that sense of, well, maybe I need to pretend that I'm willing. Take yourself, discover yourself perception-wise, where you are at this particular moment. And when you do that in this particular moment, you allow yourself to be embraced by divine spirit, and then you can move forward again.
You answered that. I was going to ask a question, but you answered that, because what you're saying is be authentic. Because I can be real with myself. Okay, let me just not fake it. Okay, I'm just, at this point, I'm just unwilling, as opposed to, well, I guess I should be willing, but I'm really not. But I'm willing, as you said, I'm willing to be willing.
Even recognizing my unwillingness, it gets rather paradoxical. Even recognizing my unwillingness is a step in the right direction. Because I could be completely oblivious to that as well, just doing my own thing, right? But when push comes to shove, and my soul starts tapping me on the shoulder and says, "Hey, you're missing the mark here. Okay, you're going down the wrong path." And I go, "Yeah, I am, but..." And then I realize, I don't have to keep doing this. I can do this differently. But boy, there's so much, or it seems like there's so much inertia for me to push up against that I'm not sure whether I'm really ready to tackle out at this moment. So let me just lean up against the rock. And maybe it doesn't move at all, but maybe by just by leaning up against the rock, I realize that I'm willing to have some movement here. And then maybe tomorrow I might push a little bit and push a little bit more. But God says, or Divine Spirit says, I accept you and I love you where you are. That's what unconditional love is all about. I accept you and love you exactly where you are, even in your so-called unwillingness. I could not even love you more. I couldn't love you more if you were willing. Isn't that interesting? I could not love you more even if you were willing. There is no measure for that unconditional love that I hold you in. Oh, maybe you'll love me more if I'm more willing. You can do that with your little mind if you want to, but it's not the truth, because I could not love you any more than I love you in this moment. Nothing can separate you from that. Nothing. And we say this again as we teach you where you are right here, right now, this moment. We also understand that one day you might be very good at trigonometry or meditation or spiritual reading or contemplation or whatever might happen to be, chanting. As we teach you where you are, we also understand that one day you might be very good at meditation. But that does not mean you should get the lesson book now. Oh, I need this book. I need that book. Oh, I heard there's a great book. Oh, I came across this book. It's called How to Meditate. I can't tell you how many times I've read that book. Did it help me meditate? Most of the time, not. All right. It made me feel like I was a lousy meditator. Okay. There must be something wrong with me because I'm not doing it right. So I go by my library and I say, well, maybe I need to blow the dust off that book again. Oops. I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure when my emails decided to show up. Okay, we're back. As we teach you where you are, we also understand that one day you might be very good at trigonometry or meditation or whatever you want to put in there. But that does not mean you should get the lesson book now. You must be taught at the level of awareness you can attend to. But you will not be left behind. Oh, well, you're not taking trigonometry, so you're not good enough. You don't understand what I'm talking about. You're not good enough. There's a beautiful school in Buddhism called the Mahayana, which is sometimes translated as being the big boat or the great vessel. And the philosophy behind the teachings is that the boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. In the Course in Miracles, there is an image of Jesus, the Christ consciousness, standing at a doorway. And the doorway leads to complete and total oneness with the Father. And Jesus stands at the doorway, the Christ consciousness stands at the doorway and says, I could go through that doorway right now because that's how close I am to divine consciousness. But I don't go through until everybody else is through. I'm standing here at the door and I am guiding everybody through the door and nobody, I, the only way I go through the door is when everybody else has gone through. The boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. And nobody gets judged. Am I the last one on the boat? Doesn't matter. You must understand that the teaching of right and wrong that all children receive is taught through their entire lives in very different ways. We will discuss morality later, what right and wrong means, because so much of what right and wrong means is actually what you've decided it should mean. We can go into that for another couple of hours, or you kind of get that, I think. But the teaching of right or wrong is an example, is a very good one. It's still the same lesson. Take care of yourself, do your work, take the beam out of your own eye so you can work on taking the splinter out of your brother's eye. Don't take your friend's food off his plate without asking first. Would be for the child. For the adult, something very different. For the adult, maybe take the beam out of your own eye so you can take the splinter out of your brother's eye. So it is appropriate to understand that we are doing this at all levels. Everything, every part of you gets touched. Now we will say this. Here we go. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know how I serve. Which is actually a basis for the challenges you face, must be known by you again and again. Remember, we've talked about this so many times, about being awake and being asleep, being aware, being unaware, kind of going through that all time after time, how we fall into sleep, how we fall into unawareness, the truth of who we are, truth of who somebody else is. And how we wake up again and say, you know, I could have had a V8. I could have done this differently. And what this is suggesting is saying, yes, that's true. But that's part of your path. Part of your path is waking and sleeping. Part of your path is being unaware, being aware again. And what the secret is, if there is a secret at all, is when you become aware again, is to be grateful for being aware again. Rather than beating yourself up for falling asleep. Oh, I missed my meditation last week or the last month, or I've fallen into bad habits, or I've done this or I've done that. And now I'm finally aware that I've got some choices I can make. Fine. Rejoice. It's another one of Jesus' things, you know, about the parable of the lost sheep with the lost coins. When they turn up again, it wasn't beating the hell out of myself for letting the sheep get lost or let the coin get lost. Rejoice with me. For the coin that was lost has been found. Rejoice with me because the sheep who was lost has been found. Not beat me up because I lost them. Rejoice with me because it has been found. Never had that, never made that connection before. Don't be angry with yourself because you lost it. Be rejoice with me because you found it again. Yeah, Linda? I'm not sure whether this works terribly well, but it's the best we've got right now.
Hey, along those lines, I was going to bed last night, just generally thinking, I get the word again entered my mind with all this that's going on over in Israel. I'm thinking, how many more times do we have to blow up things and kill people? We have been through this just time and time again. So what is our lesson? You know, what am I supposed to get? Or what are we supposed to get? And who is it getting? And that doesn't mean it's better, but why? I mean, we're destroying our planet that we were given. No respect for it at all, much less people. And I thought, okay, but we've gone through this before. Are we not learning? Or what? I said, what do I need to do that I'm doing wrong? But maybe I'm contributing to this. But I just wanted to feel like I had some answer or direction.
Okay.
Because I just feel overwhelmed. Just
me too.
Overwhelmed.
Me too.
With everything that I don't know which direction to go in. I'm exhausted both mentally and physically
mm-hmm.
of not knowing what to do. and it just seems like it just keeps on. And maybe we're going through, I mean, hopefully, I'm trying to see the silver lining. Hopefully, we're going through this, and maybe this might be not the last time, but we're going to see more and more. And I go back, and maybe I'm looking more at Panacea, but I'm looking at this new generation that's coming on.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're saying, like I heard a young man on the TV saying to the North Carolina legislature this past week on redistricting, he said, we've had enough. He said, we as young people have had enough, and we're watching, and we can vote now. So I said, glory, hallelujah.
What we're doing is we're reflecting on the world right now, all of both the natural disasters and the unnatural disasters that we've created for ourselves, and wondering, when the hell are we going to get it?
Right.
Now, I can sit in my catbird seat here in a non-violent situation, in fact, in a loving situation, and say, look, when are they going to get it over there? I remember one time when Margo and I were vacationing in Boulder, Colorado, which is one of our favorite spots. Haven't been there in a while. We need to go there again sometime. And we were sitting at this little breakfast place and outdoors. And there were a number of street kids around who you could tell were either homeless or wanted to be homeless. You know, they were just kind of causing whatever disturbances they. And there was somebody who was giving out these free samples of granola bars. Was dressed up in a sort of a hiking outfit, at obviously advertising these things. And I remember giving one of these granola bars to one of these kids. And the kid ripped it open and threw the wrapper on the ground. You know, here we are looking at these marvelous mountains and breathing in the mouth. Just, And immediately I got so pissed. Here we are in this marvelous, beautiful setting, and this guy, you know, just trashing it. And the idea or the words came to me at that moment. This young man cares nothing about himself. How could you possibly think that he would think something about the environment? Never forgot that moment. That's one piece. Another piece is, and I know I've said this many times before, how many times do I need to do this? Remember Peter asked Jesus, how many times should I forgive my brother? Seven times? He thought he was being rather cool. He, you know, pat me on the back, going to forgive. No, he said, I tell you, 70 times seven, which is a mystical number, which means you keep doing it until you don't need to do it anymore. The metaphysical principle that keeps reminding me of the truth is, if I see it out there, it's going on in here. So what is there going on with me that is violent, that is separate, that is hateful, that is strenuous, that is tearing me apart? That's where my work. That's where my work begins. Now, it doesn't say don't carry a sign, don't contribute to this cause, don't do this. Don't. It didn't say ignore all of that. So do anything a part of that you want to, but recognize that's not really where the change or the transformation is going to take place. Transformation is going to take place within my own heart. The way Peace Pilgrim put it so wonderfully, and Margot reminded me of this a while ago, is, when enough people reach a state of inner peace, there will be no more war. When enough people reach a state of inner peace, there will be, and I heartily believe that's true. I can't explain that. I don't want to get philosophical or theological about it, but when I heard those words, they went bam, right in here. I said, that is the truth. And so that can be my contribution, as simple as that might happen to be, one moment at a time. How can I hold these desperate people? Because what's going to happen over there right now, at least what I think is going to happen, is the retaliation is going to be absolutely brutal. And it's just going to create the scene for another uprising. Unless Jerry. Something changes.
No. Jerry. Oh, back in the early, I guess it was the late 80s, early 90s, I was working for Capital Holding, and I was part of a team. We worked for a very enlightened executive team, and we were charged with creating teams in our organization. And this was before most organizations were doing teams. Today, it's everybody has teams. Every organization has teams. My team was called the Knowledge Workers Team. So this was before people were talking about knowledge workers. And so Peter Drucker had coined the term knowledge workers, but we were charged with getting the organization to work in teams. And we were charged with getting them to work in certain ways and to plan work differently. And there were certain ways we wanted them to work, but we were the executive team had decided that they were not going to say, do it this way. They were not going to lay down rules. They wanted it to become organic, and they were going to do it. They wanted it to work the way the 100 monkeys had worked, if you remember that story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've forgotten what that field is called, but the idea is
morphogenetic. That,
based on
it's called a morphogenetic
field. Thank you. I've been trying to remember that for a couple of weeks now. And the idea was that if we would engage them in a way that would teach them to work in this way, we would get them to do this. And so we created the environments in the new building we had built downtown on 4th and Broadway. We would, and we gave them the experience of working that way that they would create it for themselves. And so we created, I was charged with building an experience for them. And so we would take them into a classroom in small groups, and we would explain the kind of work we wanted them to do. And we would ask them about the future. And we say, then they would turn to me and they would say, well, can we do this? And I would say, well, we can't show you how to do this today unless we go to the future. And so we would lead them through this wind tunnel into the future. And in this future experience, we would put them in teams, and we would actually put them into experience where they would do it. And people would cry at the end of the day because they loved working like that. Now, the next day, they were back in their same old, but you know what happened? Here's what happened. About 9 months later, we walked through our building, and what we discovered was the organization was working that way. What we needed was something like, I can't remember if it was 12% or 15%. That was the prediction. We needed that much of the population to understand and want the change. It wasn't like we needed 50% of the world to want that. We needed something like 15% of the world to want to change and be like that. And suddenly, our entire company was working like that in teams. They had self-organized into that. And so I hold that out as someday we're going to get there, but I don't know I don't know how, but if we could get 15% of the world to want to do that and know how to do that, if we could educate them and put them in that experience. So I'll just hold that out as a dream. Thanks.
Thanks, John. And let's just suppose that's already happening, that there are little groups like this that are meeting all around the world, that are doing this kind of work that might not have been present maybe 10 or 15 years ago. I believe that's true. I'm going to need to close up this morning because I've got to talk and I got to unpack some stuff. So let's just take a moment and I will do a longer meditation that I will send you by email. By the way, if anybody here in person or electronically is not getting our weekly updates, please send me your email address and I'll make sure you get on the list. So if you wouldn't mind just closing your eyes for a second, take a couple of breaths, calm down your innards. Notice the small self plays "Ain't It Awful" all the time. And there's no answer to that one. The way Emily Cady put it, "God, I don't know the answer, you do, show me." And let us just be open to that for a moment. God, I don't know the answer, you do, show me. Soften a little bit around that. Let that be a directive for your creative energy today. I don't know the answer, you do, show me. Deep breath. Stretch your bed. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all. Hope you have a peaceful day. Take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. Peace.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Jerry. Jerry. Have a good week.
You too.